This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, flying solo on the program here with you this afternoon. The Pontiff of the Pick Four enjoying a little time off around this holiday season. We want to welcome everybody tuning in, Sirius 219, XM 206, and everyone tuning in worldwide with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. And for the past couple of years, we've been able to bring you the stories behind the stories with so many of the people that helped to make our sport a success. And those are the trainers of the sport. And that's what we're going to do here tonight. And this is a show that I am really, really looking forward to because our special guest tonight has had so much experience in the game. He is now out on his own, training horses on his own, but that wasn't the case for much of his career. We're going to tell you all about it over the course of the next hour. Don't forget, if you miss any portion of this show, you can head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast of this program and all of our Trainer Talk shows, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Well, in just his second full year of training on his own, the 37-year-old native of Dominican Republic, who, by the way, was raised in Hempstead, New York, has trained 18 winners, 12 of those coming this year in 2016, which makes him only 3,841 wins behind his mentor, the late, great Alan Jerkins. And you know I'm talking about trainer Fernando Abreu, who joins us here on Trainer Talk tonight. Fernando, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
How about that? 3,841 more wins to equal the Chief.
That's big. That's a long way from now. Hopefully.
Could you ever imagine? I mean, you had the opportunity to work with Alan Jerkins, but since, well, I guess November of 1996 is when you went to work for Alan. How fortunate were you to have been able to spend so much time working alongside the Chief?
Well, very fortunate. Basically, the last 10 years of me working with him was like the best 10 years because that's when I became his assistant and, you know, you get to absorb a lot of things that he does and different things that he does with horses and all that. But I could say I was very fortunate to be with the Chief.
You know, I mentioned working with him since November of 1996. That's nearly 19 years. You started as a hot walker, then you worked your way up to assistant. Tell me about the day that you first met Alan Jerkins.
I was going to start working for somebody else, and a cousin of mine was working for the Chief, for Alan Jerkins. And he says, come over here. We need some help. And, you know, I went up to the Chief he's known for kicking buckets and all that, but at the same time, there was nothing. He was really a teddy bear. And I started walking hots, and I worked my way up to rubbing horses, and, you know, he's seen that I want to keep climbing up the ladder and gave me a shot. One of his assistants, which was Chuck Simon at the time, he's a former trainer now, went out on his own, and he told me that I was ready to take the step up to an assistant, and from there we took it on, and we had a lot of success together.
You know, so many people that have joined me on this program over the years that have come through that Alan Jerkins school, so to speak, and worked with him like you have, Fernando, they describe him as being a great teacher. Is that accurate?
Yes. Great, great, great teacher. And he was always open for you to ask him whatever question. And that's one thing he always liked, explaining why he did that or why he didn't or why it didn't work. And a lot of things you could come up to him and ask him. And even trainers that didn't work for him, will come up, a handful of trainers that I know will come up and ask him a question. I have a horse doing this, this, and that. What should I do? And sure enough, Alan would try to tell him exactly what he would have done with the horse. And, you know, they come up and ask him for a lot of tips before.
What made Alan Jerkins so good?
I don't know. He had his ways with the horses. I mean, you could see he was like inside the horse's mind forever. And he never trained all the horses the same. Or, you know, a lot of trainers get one day off. They work on Saturday, work every 7 days. Or, you know, he was totally different. He treated every horse different, especially with the fillies. I thought he was great with the filly. But at the same time, as a human being, he was just great off and on the track. You know, on and off the track, he was great. I mean, there was nobody he didn't – if he could help, he would help everybody he could.
Yeah, you know, I never got the chance to know Alan Jerkins as well as so many people did in this sport, but my one memory is stopping by the barn down at Gulfstream Park shortly before he passed away. We were there in February of 2015 for a broadcast, and – I introduced myself, spent, 10 minutes or so talking with him, and then I asked him if he would be okay with spending an hour on this show to look back on his life and his career when we came back down in March. And he said, absolutely, you come see me, and we'll get together and we will do the show. Well, we came back down about a week after he passed away, so we never got the opportunity to have Alan on this show and hear his stories. But from what I understand, his stories were just absolutely legendary.
Oh, yes. I mean, stories. I mean, he wouldn't remember too much what happened the day before, but what happened a long time ago, he remembered it like it was today. And, you know, that's what a lot of people like. A lot of people used to, Chief, let's go for dinner, just to hear all his stories. And, I mean, a lot of things he just, you'd be like, wow, or you'd be just like speechless just hearing. And, you know, even if you heard the story before, it would sound so great back again. It's unbelievable. He was remarkable when he was talking and everything that he did in the earlier days and how he got his license and working with his fathers and, you know, a lot of things.
You had the chance, Fernando, to hear so many of his stories when you would drive from Belmont to Saratoga with him every year. Tell me about those trips.
He would always want me to drive him to Saratoga, so I have my car, so I have to get a driver to drive my car to Saratoga so I could drive him down. And he would always start off with a story, and halfway, I would say like an hour into the drive, he would fall asleep. And I would leave him alone, and then all of a sudden, whoop, he gets right back up 10 minutes later and picks up right where he left off. And I mean, it was an amazing story. And his one thing was he always had to make a stop in McDonald's, and believe it or not, and have a sausage, egg, and cheese McMuffin. And he said, there's nothing better than that. It tastes better than a steak. It tastes better than anything else. But a lot of the stories that he would say on the ride there, you know, some of them was personal, but at the same time, some of them was like, about horses and how he trained and how he got them to be better and what he did different and all that. He was top notch. That's all I could say. I mean, you very rarely back here you could see one person talk bad about the Chief or say anything negative about him. I mean, from the grooms to the riders to the trainers and owners, a lot of respect back here for Alan Jerkins.
What was maybe your favorite story that he ever told you, whether it was on that trip from Belmont to Saratoga or maybe just around the barn one day? What's your favorite Alan Jerkins story?
One of them was when I think he was taking all over training for Jack Dreyfuss, which was Hobo Farm. And, you know, he always used to say that he never ran a clean barn like, you know, the Pletchers and the Lucas. They have a very neat barn and all that. His feed tubs was, the Chief feed tub was always white, purple, orange. Blankets was all kinds of color and all that. But his horses was always looking top notch and well taken care of. And when Mr. Dreyfus came over to offer him the horses, the one thing Dreyfus said to him, you know, you got a good pirate ship you run in here, and the Chiefs thought that was a thrill. And sometimes, you know, it's not the flashiness of the game, it's how you're taking care of these horses and what you could really get out of it. And it proved by the way that he was doing things. He was doing the right things for the horses. He didn't care about the Shero. And his one thing was, he always used to say, Shero don't win races. Those 20 minutes you're going to waste on that Shero, please put it on that horse's legs and stuff like that. And him and Mr. Dreyfus had a lot of success together.
Yeah, an awful lot of success. It sounds like you were paying attention pretty closely over those 19 years, Fernando. What's the most important lesson that you learned from Alan Jerkins that maybe you're still using when you're training your own horses today?
I mean, just seeing them how they – the main thing is seeing them how they come back. And he was one that he always would come back at least 3 times a day, morning, afternoon, and after he ate dinner, he would come back and feed his horses again to see who ate up, who's doing that, the attitude and all that. And that's one – I think the feeding program is big, and that's one thing I have learned from him a lot. You know, the horses now these days are more fragile than I think than when the Chief had them back then. And plus, when you're training on your own and you got to give owners explanation, it's totally different than, you know, back then Alan Jerkins had to give the explanation, not us, not the assistants. But just like the reaction of the horse, that's what basically I learned more from him. And, you know, sometimes I try to do a couple of things like him, even in the workout. He was known for working a horse hard or coming back and blowing him out. And I guess I sometimes pick the wrong horse and don't work out. But, you know, he was like that also. He's a lot of the horses that he did things didn't work out. But you think it's going to work for you, but a lot of things that work for Alan Jerkins don't work for you.
You bring up a great point about giving explanations to owners. And when you're the assistant, you don't have to worry about that. It all falls on the head trainer. But now that you're out on your own, it's up to you to be able to deliver that message and be up front and let owners know what's going on with their horses. Is there a certain way to go about doing that, Fernando?
It's just tough. It depends what kind of news you're going to tell the owners also, you know. You know, the bad news, you never want to – you really don't want to make that phone call. But really, I've been fortunate enough that right now, early in my career, I have had some bad news, but I have had good owners that know how to take it, you know, and they understand the game and know that these are horses. They are fragile. We do try to do the best we can with them so they won't get hurt. And, you know, other than that, like I said, I've been fortunate with the owners that I have. They've been taking the news really good, and some that don't take it good, but it's part of the game. I mean, last thing as a trainer we want is something bad to happen to the horse.
Visiting with trainer Fernando Abreu here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Worked 19 years, nearly 19 years for the Chief, before the Chief passed away March 18th of 2015. 19 years is a long time, Fernando. Why didn't you go out on your own sooner, or did you actually think about doing that?
Actually, his wife at the time was sending me to go out on my own for her, private for her. She had a barn in the Fairhill, and the Chief came. I asked the Chief, I said, "Boss, Mrs. Jerkins asked me this and that." He says, "Don't worry, I'll handle that." And that was the end of that. She had somebody, she got somebody else to do it, but I wasn't ready. Realistic, if he would have lived another 10 more years, 15 more years, I would have loved it, and I still would have been his assistant. That's how great communication and, you know, the chemistry me and him had together. I wasn't dying to be a trainer or whatever. It was one of my goals, but I could have waited for him to be gone. I wasn't going to, and especially being late in his career, you know, bringing another assistant to try to understand him and be tough.
You described your relationship with him as being very, very unique. You actually described it as being more like a father and a son relationship as opposed to a boss-employee relationship. Tell me about that special bond that you had with him.
It was special. It's exactly like you said, as a father and son. I mean, I would have, you know, problems or something. I'd come up to him and talk to him, and sometimes I had him come up to me, and, you know, he had a discussion or something, or he was mad at something, and he would come up to me and talk to me, and I'm over here giving Alan Jerkins advice. I said, oh, my God. You know, but we had that all the time, and we really, really get along. I mean, everywhere he went, I was there, or where I went, he was there. It was father and son. We always talk, and, I mean, to the last day he was in bed in the hospital, I think we were still there together.
Tell me about the football games.
The football games, we would feed the horses and everything, and once we put feed in, a group of guys would come and know the chief. He was always the quarterback, you know, and we would play football, and Leah Giamatti, I remember Billy Mott also used to come sometime over to one of the grooms, didn't know what football was, and he watched it, and he watched it on TV and laid Billy Mott out one day, thinking it was supposed to be tag football and not real football.
But he tackled him? He tackled Bill Mott?
Yeah, he tackled Bill Mott. That was the end of that. But no, the chief, he always loved it. He loved football and loved the quarterback thing, and he would draw plays, and it would be great. A lot of people just, that's the whole thing. A lot of people would join together just to be around him, and after that, he would have a beer or two and just tell stories. I mean, he would draw up a play, and then after that, after we was done, he would had a blast telling stories and having two beers with the guy. One thing about him, though, he would never say goodbye.
Really?
Yes. He could have had two beers with you sitting down there. He was telling stories. He would get in his car and just drive away. And he says he used to hate to say goodbye. He doesn't like saying goodbye.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Great stories. Fernando Abreu here with us on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton on HRRN. Fernando, when you finally went out on your own, and it wasn't your decision, obviously, it was after the chief passed away, you were training some of the same horses, obviously a lot of the same horses that were in his care. Tell me about that first starter that you finally sent out on your own.
The first start, it was very, very emotional. You know, not having him there, he in the paddock. He would, last few years of his career, he wouldn't saddle. He would still let me saddle. But he always used to come right next to you while you were saddling and, like, just touch the saddle. Like, you know, just touch it. Even if he wasn't going to move it nowhere or nothing, he just wanted to touch it. And right then in that moment, on my first horse, it really hit me. Like, I was looking for him to come and touch the saddle. And horse, it happened to be Niche. A horse called Niche for Joseph V. Shields, a long client of Mr. Jerkins, and now he's a client of mine, owner of mine. But he also happened to get claimed, also the first star to get claimed. I think it had 2 days, the chief passing away also. But, you know, it was very, very, very emotional and sentimental. I mean, just it was great at the moment, but at the same time, you know, yeah. At the same time, it was sad. It was just sad not being around. You know, I was looking for him. Just, oh, I look up or something. And even when I won my first race, I'm just waiting for him to say, good job. You know, that's a lot of things we do in this game. You always, you know, looking for somebody to have your back. And I know he would have my back. You know, I just wanted to make him proud, really. That's all we want.
Yeah, I read that you said that you don't usually wear sunglasses, but the day you started your first horse, Niche, you put them on that day.
Yes, I just It was him. He got me into that because he never liked to see you with sunglasses in the paddock. He was always, what you trying to hide behind there? You know, he was just
really.
So I would, yes, and I never. You want people to see you in your eyes and all that. So I never do wear sunglasses. But that one day, I had to wear it because, you know, he already had passed a week ago, and then it's like a father. He was like a father. He was my father, basically, the last 19 years. And, you know, and it was tough. It was tough being there without him.
Yeah, and you mentioned your first winner. Your first starter, of course, came March 25th of 2015, 7 days after Alan Jerkins passed away. Your first winner came nearly 1 month to the day that Alan passed away. That was on April 16th of 2015 with 17-1 long shot Bold Summit. Take me back to that day.
Yeah, that day was that's another one. Bold Summit. The chief trained him, and we broke his maiden when the chief was still around, and I'm getting a little choke up now still talking about it, but it was just fun. I mean, just seeing him pass the wire in front of the first thing was, I looked up, and sure enough, it's like, we did it, Papa, because I always used to call him Papa. And it seems like he was right there, you know, looking at me. First, 5 minutes before post, I'm wearing a shirt, and the bird passed by and happened to poop on me. I said, wow, I guess this must be good luck. Sure enough, the horse just went, and Mr. Moore was the owner of the horse, is the owner of the horse, and, you know, everybody was happy. So,
what is it about moment. That with birds at the racetrack? I've heard that a million times. If a bird does that on your program, it's supposed to be good luck. If a bird does that on you, it's supposed to be good luck. What's that all about, Fernando?
This is the racetrack. You try to get so many superstitious stuff, and it's unbelievable. But, I mean, I really don't like birds pooping on me. But if it means good luck, let them poop over you all over.
If you're going to find yourself in the winner's circle a little while later,
yes.
It's okay.
Yes, it's okay. We could wash that off with a sponge.
Are you superstitious?
A little bit. Yes, I am. I am.
Yeah, what superstitions do you have?
The black cats. There's a lot of cats in the racetrack. I don't permit them in my barn, and I never go around, never let one. If one crossed me, I would drive around. Yes, I believe that. And I got stuck on one superstitious thing that the chief used to hate, that the grooms did: eat peanuts and throw the shells on the floor of the barn. I don't let that happen. I don't know what that meant to this day, but he didn't like that. He says, that's bad luck. We never going to win another race again. Sure enough, I don't let it happen.
Was he superstitious?
Yes, he was. He was. He was.
He must have had more than just the peanuts, though.
Yes, he didn't like to pose before the, you know, like people in the paddock, hey, a picture with Alan. You know, he thought that was the biggest kiss of death also, the taking the picture before the winner's circle, before winning the race, stuff like that. He just didn't like too much taking pictures before going into the winner. After he won a race, you could have taken all the pictures you want with him. Doesn't matter, but not before.
Will you take pictures before a race now?
I try not to. I mean, if they take it, fine, but I try not to. But at the same time, you know, different kind of game now. You're supposed to take pictures, or they are start harassing you or calling you names that you're not, you know, not humble, but which is not true. It's just sometimes the way you're brought up.
So if a black cat walks in front of your horse when you're leading him from the barn to the paddock, are you scratching the horse?
Unfortunately, we don't have that kind of control that we could scratch him, but if I could, I would.
It's that bad?
Yes. I mean, it's something. It's just, but if it's a black cat and you see some white on him, it's okay. But if it's completely black, oh.
Speaking of barns, you are still training from the very same barn that Alan Jerkins had at Gulfstream all those years, barn 14. What's that like for you?
Now is easy. at the first, at the beginning when it all happens and training here, I almost asked to be moved from the barn just because it was sad. It was every day coming here, and then, you know, I have a lot of pictures of him on the wall in the office. It was just breaking me up every day. I mean, it was really very, you know, you miss it. Even the horses, when I pull up in my car, usually the horses, they start nickering. But that's the sign when the chief used to come up in the road, they nicker because they know he was going to give them food. And all that is just, you know, you start crying. I mean, you just break down easy because you miss him. I still miss him to this day. You know, I know Jimmy Jerkins, his son, which is also a very famous trainer and doing real good. He came here the first year, you know, his father died. Then he went to New York. When they came back here for the winter, he came to visit me, and he broke down crying. I mean, just, you know, just because he missed him, and this was his old barn. It's tough.
He has a couple of sons that train, right? Doesn't his son Steve train too?
Yeah, Stevie Jerkins. He trains in New York also with Jimmy Jerkins. And he has a twin. Jimmy Jerkins has a twin, Julie Jerkins, and, well, she's married. But she's a teacher, and his oldest son is Alan. Just after, named after him. He's a sportscaster, if I'm not mistaken, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Is there any extra pressure when you're training horses that were trained by a legend like Alan Jerkins when you go out and saddle them?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Yeah, there's a lot of pressure because, you know, you want to. I'm not saying you want to, you know, you, I doubt it if you ever do better than what the chief did, but, you know, you want to do as good of a job or try to do as good of a job. And, you know, you get all the hecklers around there always talking about, hey, thank you, Alan Jerkins is better, whatever. And all that. But still, you know, you try to prove those people wrong. And, but you try to do that with every horse, not only the ones that the chief train. I try to do that with every horse. I try to do, if I get a horse from somebody else or a horse that nobody has had, I try to do the best I can with them.
Fernando Abreu, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. We're going to get to a short commercial break. We'll continue this visit, and we'll tell you about the horse that he feels might have been his favorite horse that he had when he was with Alan Jerkins. We'll tell you all about that next, right here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
This November, nearly 5,000 horses will be offered at breeding stock sales in Lexington, Kentucky. Fasig Tipton has your shortlist. No less than 25 Grade 1 winners or producers, 59 graded stakes winners or producers, 50 selected weanlings, a remarkable 83% black type earners or producers, all in one spectacular evening. One book, one session, one focus. Quality on every page. The world's premier breeding stock event, the November sale at Fasig Tipton.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Rosso Maya, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And now the field turns for home. Susan's Angel and Yearly Report, they both check out of it. Here's Stellar Jane to take it to a shadow at the top of the stretch. Society Selection on the far outside, hard to handle in third. There's one furlong to go, and it is Stellar Jane, a shadow fighting back. ungainly, and Society Selection is charging down the middle of the track. Here comes Society Selection, and she takes the lead. Society Selection, trained by Alan Jerkins, pulls an upset here to win the Alabama. Stellar Jane finishes second, and a Shadow trudges home third.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you in our Lexington studios, visiting with trainer Fernando Abreu, who is now on his own. He's been training on his own for a couple of years, 19 years, an assistant to the Hall of Famer Alan Jerkins. Technically 18 and a half, but that's close enough to 19 in our book. You heard some great stories in the first half of the show, looking back on the life and career of Alan Jerkins, and now we're going to talk more about some of the horses that he had the opportunity to be around, including Society Selection. You just heard Tom Durkin with the call of the Grade 1 Alabama at Saratoga back in 2004. Society Selection pairing up back-to-back Grade 1 victories with that effort that afternoon, and a horse that earned nearly $2 million. She was pretty good, Fernando.
Yes, she was. She was very special. She, from day one, she came in the barn, owned by Irvin and Marjorie Cowens, and you know, she was training lights out. And first race, I think, was in Saratoga. Actually, she was. I think she went undefeated in Saratoga every time she ran. You know, and she was special. She took us places, and you know, you always like the ones that win the Grade One. You know, and but she was fun to be around the barn and everything. She had her own personality and everything. And everywhere she went, that's why she's my favorite horse. I had to go because, I mean, a lot of things that she did, nobody would understand. It's just me and the chief, and the chief would never like to travel. So that's why I went with everywhere she went. And she was fun to be around.
What kind of things would she do that people might not understand unless you're around her?
I mean, she's one of those, like, for you to feed her, you couldn't feed her. Like, some people have the water buckets in one side and the feed bucket on the other side. She has to have both of them right on top of each other, because if not, she wouldn't eat. And little things like that. When she came back from the track to walk, from training, when she started walking, you know, she almost looked like a horse that wanted to tie up, but that wasn't her. You know, that's just her. I mean, you know, and Alan Jerkins had a lot of the horses, when they come back, drink water that had electrolytes in it from a feed tub. So if you expect her to drink from a water bucket when she came back from the track, she wasn't going to drink. She had to drink from the feed tub because she liked putting, like, basically her whole face into the eye level of the feed tub. And that was little things like that, you know, and you would have to keep her walking because she was a bit of a nervous filly being by Coronado's Quest, you know, but she was fun. Those were the little things.
Well, I remember that day in the Alabama. I mentioned that was her second consecutive Grade One, because earlier that season at Saratoga, she won the Grade One test. But you think about the Alabama victory and having to get by an outstanding filly by the name of A Shadow, and she was able to do that, and she did it so impressively. Tom Durkin in his call had her at the back of the pack when they turned for home, but she had just had this powerful late kick, didn't she?
Yes. I mean, she had a powerful great kick, but also she was trained to the T for that race. The Alabama was a mile and a quarter. She just came from winning the test, which was 7 furlongs. Edgar Prado rode her in the test and, you know, decided to come off of the Alabama just because he was going to ride Fleet Indian, which was undefeated at the time, for J.J. Toner, I think, trained at the time, not Todd. And, you know, going into the race, if you see her workout, going into the race seven days before, he worked a mile in 1:39. You know, who works a horse? A lot of people don't work a horse a mile. You know, they don't go, now these days they're going to run a mile and a quarter, a mile and a half. They don't work a horse past 5 furlongs. But he worked them a mile, even though he was getting the press was into him and asking him, but this is something the chief always did. But worked a mile and 139. 4 days later, he came back and blew her out. Half a mile and 47. And he said she was ready to roll. And, you know, the girl, Shannon Yuski, which is a jockey now, used to get on in the morning. And sure enough, I mean, those fillies in Alabama, they looked like they were short in stride, and she was just coming to get him at the end. She had that late closing kick all the time.
You know, you had been around the chief long enough at that point to have seen him do that type of training regimen with several horses, and it worked. It just worked for Alan Jerkins. And you said in the first half of the show that a lot of the things Alan did, you couldn't do if you were a different trainer. It just didn't work for you, so to speak. What were you thinking as you're watching him take her through and up to that race from the test to the Alabama?
I mean, we believe in him so much. You know, it's just when he did stuff like that, we was like, wow. And when he worked, we used to love for him to work a horse a mile, because we knew the horse, in other words, in the backside saying, we knew the horse wasn't coming up for air. So he wasn't going to get tired or not. The jockey could have told him whatever he wanted. Just don't tell him that the horse got tired, because that horse trained in that morning, in the mornings, like a champ. So, you know, it gives you goosebumps when you see stuff like that and develop, because he tells you exactly the time that he wants it, and you can see his face. Like, the way the horses do it, like when they work a mile and then they can finish towards the last quarter of a mile, you could see his face like, oh, we got it done. And, you know, when he'll come back to the barn and he'll let you know if it was wrong. He was strong in that with the riders. You know, you'll start screaming and letting you know what you did wrong. But at the same time, that one particular week, everything went right. And we sure beat some good fillies there.
Have you tried that approach with any of your horses yet, Fernando?
I would love to, just to tell you. But sometimes, it's, you know, right now, if Alan Jerkins was Alan Jerkins, the chief, Hall of Fame train and everything, right now in my career, being this young, just starting off, I'm petrified in the sense, if I work a horse a mile like he did and work him, I'd be crucified either by the media or the horse might not run no good and the owner might not like it. Pull away your horses, you know. It's tough right now.
Yeah, it's a little different game than back when Alan was in his prime doing this with all of his horses. Things are a little bit different now for trainers, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They are. They're very different. I mean, pretty sure trainers out there work further than 5/8 or 3/4 of a mile, but they put down 5/8 just for the same reason. Because, I mean, I don't see a horse breezing 5/8 of a mile to run a mile and a half being fit.
You mentioned that the chief would occasionally let the riders know about it if something didn't go right out on the racetrack. Did you ever do anything that led him to say, hey, Fernando, what are you thinking, and to kind of get on you a little bit?
Oh, yeah, plenty of time. it was plenty of time. Whoever said that the chief didn't get after them one or twice never worked for Alan Jerkins. It was a lie. That's how you know. But he had that heart, though. He'll come and tell you what he did wrong, what you did wrong, but at the same time, he wouldn't let the day go by without coming to you and trying to be, apologetic for screaming, but, you know, oh, he'll get a beer and let's have a beer and that's it. It ends there. He didn't have that grudge or none of that. He wouldn't stay mad at you for a while, for a long time, like certain trainers do with jockeys or exercise rider. He would make sure he let you know his point, and then from there you was all forgiven. Come back home.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite moments that we've had here on Horse Racing Radio Network with our live racing coverage was back in 2012 at Saratoga. And one of the races we were covering that afternoon was the Grade One Prioress. And it was won by Emma Zoncor, trained by Alan Jerkins. Of course, you remember that day, I'm sure. It was his final career graded stakes victory. And right after the race, Sean Clancy was working with us that day, handling a lot of the paddock reports and post-race interviews. He watched the race with the chief. And immediately after the race, we went down to Sean, and he did an interview with the chief, and the chief was crying That's how much that meant to him, and it was one of my all-time favorite moments we've ever had on radio.
Yeah, that was very, very special day also. That was his last Grade 1 winner, which is Emma's encore. And, you know, he goes to Philly that came to us that the year before in Gulfstream. And sure enough, the Philly, form-wise, looked like nobody wanted her. She was still a maiden. And he did such a remarkable job with her and broke her maiden for 50. Came back and win a other than two other than then she went, I think it was a Grade 3 in New York, 6.5, and she just got up also with Junior Alvarado. And that day we shipped to Saratoga, and the Philly was training super again. And you know, his favorite line was, he loved to come to Saratoga and see one of those little jockeys on them. And when they come on the lawn jockeys, when you come into the grandstand, they had the Grade 1 winners on there. He used to love the shirts to see there. But with him crying, and most likely he probably had a beer in his hand also walking. Sean was interviewing. I remember the day was... It was a great day also.
Yeah.
That's great work for the boss, yeah.
Remarkable day. And have it happen at Saratoga, where really so much of his legend was cemented at Saratoga. You know, very, very special day, very special moment there, especially for us here on the network. It was just absolutely incredible. You know, Alan is part of the Walk of Fame at Saratoga now too, Fernando. Have you been through that Walk of Fame yet?
No, the Walk of Fame? No, not really.
Yeah, they've created that years ago, a few years back, for individuals who have had an impact on Saratoga racing. You know, Tom Durkin, Dwayne Lucas is there, Alan Jerkins, of course, and it's a really special thing. If you ever get a chance to walk through there and take a look, it's well worth the walk.
Okay.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it. Who were some of the other horses outside of, say, Society Selection, Amazon Corps, some of the other horses that you were around that really had an impact on you and that you're never going to forget?
I mean, one of them was Kelly Kipp, very good sprinter that the Chief had. This is horse, what was so remarkable about him, the Chief used to blow him out an eighth of a mile either the day of the race or sometimes the day before the race with Jean-Luc Semien. And this sprinter, I mean, he beat, you name him, he beat. He broke his own track records. He has, like, I would say, like, four track records if they haven't broken it yet. But he used to, that was a neat little horse, and he was not big at all. Small little horse, but he was built like a tank. Bad-legged, in other words. That was, you know, the Chief was known for that. Those horses that, and people would think injecting and all that, he doesn't inject or none of that. His thing was ice. He calls it a full court press. Put him in ice before and after and in the afternoon. And, I mean, things like that. Kelly Kipp was one. A filly called Lila. I'm pretty sure he talked about her a lot because it was a great feeling for him. That's where Shannon Yuski was the first winner as a female jock, as a jockey starting her career. Lila, she went a little stake when things wasn't going so good for us that year. We was running horses, in other words, and we wasn't winning too many races, and Lila came through, you know, and things like that makes him. But I also been around Political Force, teammate, a good stallion that's in Kentucky right now, Warfront, you know, pretty good horses, really good horses.
Yeah, the list goes on and on. You look at all the great stakes winners that were trained by Alan Jerkins over the years, and certainly since you came on board in the mid-90s, it was just an amazing run. One thing that always eluded Alan Jerkins, though, was that Triple Crown win at Derby, Preakness, Belmont, even a Breeders' Cup win. Why do you think that is? Why was that missing from his resume?
Basically, you know, a lot of the horses that he got in was more homebred, you know. He never had the one owners that go to the sale and spend a lot of money and send them the horses. He was basically, Jack Dreyfuss was his main client, and we would get the homebreds that wasn't And basically when they was 3 years, that's when we basically got him. And he would take his time getting them ready. And the chief really hated to ship. You just hate to ship. Even if the horse, he thought the horse was good enough, he would wait for them to come to Belmar. But just could never get lucky and get one of those races.
Yeah, a lot of luck is involved in winning those races,
yes,
too. And getting the horse to those races, it takes
yes.
an awful lot of luck. And, you know, unfortunately, it just never quite happened for the chief. But, boy, so much success over the years. And, again, Fernando Abreu, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, was part of that success for a very, very long time. Fernando, let's talk about you for a minute. You grow up in the Dominican Republic, but you moved to the United States, I guess, what, when you were around 4, is that right?
Yeah, I was around 4, turning 5. Went to school in Hempstead, Queens Village in New York, and my parents moved from New York to Florida, and I finished school over here in Miramar High School. And from there, but I knew the racetrack is where I wanted to be. My father was a leading jockey in Dominican Republic. My whole family, basically. My mother used to work in the racetrack. My older brother, he used to train for Mary Lou Whitney for a period of time, and assistant for Nick Zito. My other brother was longtime assistant for Chad Brown. He decided to go on his own this year, and he's just starting off. I think he's done good so far. He run 2 horses and won with both of them. And basically, it just run through our blood, being in the horses.
You know, it's great that you have your whole family involved in the sport. And like so many trainers I've had on this program over the years, it's one of those things where it sounds to me, Fernando, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is all you ever wanted to do.
Yes. Yes, this is all. I mean, there's a lot of people that want to do a lot of things. I just want to be involved with the horses. I love it. It's better than being with people, I tell you. Horses are great.
You know, I've heard that from a lot of trainers, too. That's kind of a common theme on this show. You mentioned your brother going out on his own and having success, 2 for 2, I guess. Did he talk with you before he went out on his own and ask you for any advice or anything?
Yes, he did. George Abreu now, which he was assistant for Chad, but he did talk to me. I tried to convince him not to go out on his own yet, you know, but he was antsy. He wanted to feel what it was. And, you know, I told him, I said, if you got the right owners and owners that want to let you put them where they belong and the horses where they belong, and you'll feel good. You know, you'll do good and everything. And so far, he's been doing okay on there. So, I mean, the whole thing in this game is realistic, is having a good horse. We all have horses, and they all can run. It's just a matter of how fast can they run. You know, and owners sometimes being realistic and letting you run in the right spot, you know, where the horses could compete.
Yeah, that's such an important part of having success. But it's equally as important for the trainer to be able to recommend those correct spots where the horse can compete, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is very important for the trainer to do that, because I mean, we do recommend it, but sometimes, you know, that's voted out right away. But you know, you give it a try, but the good thing is they come back and then they listen to you the next time, and you could spot them in the right spot.
Were you ever old enough to remember your dad watching your dad ride?
No, I watched him more on video than anything, but no, I was never old enough to watch him ride live.
Yeah, champion jockey in the Dominican. He had to be pretty good. Did he ever ride here in the States?
No, he never came up to the States and rode. I mean, he probably came over here and did some exercise riding, but never rode as a jockey over here.
So as a kid growing up, were there other people in the industry, maybe trainers or even jockeys, that you looked up to and said, man, someday I'd like to be like them?
You know, at the time when I was growing up, I remember Angel Cordero was the thing, but I wanted to be a jockey, but that went out the window, the weight-wise. that went out the window. But, you know, as a trainer, basically all I know is a lot of good horsemen back here in the racetrack. But basically all I know is Alan Jerkins, and I, you know, being 19 years with him, I always had support, and that's who I really wanted to be. I didn't want to be like him. I wanted to be just half of him, because the guy, to me, was a legend.
So how would you describe your training philosophy or your approach to training horses now, Fernando?
You know, I try to just try to get the best out of them, that's all. I mean, it's just, like I said before, I'm here three times a day looking at them over and just trying to see where I could improve on them. So basically, you know, taking good care of them, feeding them the right things, and, you know, getting the best out of them in the morning, and hopefully they could show that in the afternoon. It's always good when you do all the work in the morning, it pays off in the afternoon. You know you're doing the right thing in the morning, at least. You know, and some horses make you look bad. Some horses, they train like champs in the morning, and then in the afternoon, you couldn't find them with a search warrant. You know, but I consider myself right now, like, you know, I'm here. I don't know everything, because there's no such thing as knowing everything. Horses make you humble real quick. And, you know, just here, put in 24/7. There's no holidays in this game.
Yeah, and I assume that you are learning something new every day. Is that right?
Yes. And, you know, there are trainers like Jimmy Jerkins, Ralph Nix, and, you know, I have asked things that I see that I have done wrong, or what would they do, or if I have problem with a horse. And those are trainers that I feel comfortable enough to go in and ask them.
What's the one thing, and I'll put you on the spot a little bit with this question, but the one thing that you have done over the past couple of years since going out on your own that you wish that maybe you could have that moment back and say, you know, maybe I should have done that a little bit differently now that I've gotten some more experience under my belt?
I try to do the one thing was with this one that I won't mention the horse. So in case the owner's listening, he won't.
It remains anonymous.
I blew out a horse 2 days before the race just to try to put out some speed into him. But at the time, I knew it was the right decision to make. I blew him out 2 days and blew him out an eighth of a mile. The only problem was it went wrong, and the rider couldn't pull him up. So it went out three-eighths of a mile instead of just blowing out eighth of a mile. The horse happened to run real big and finished third, but I'm thinking I did too much with him 2 days out.
Yeah. Yeah, that never happened.
If I could have that moment back, I probably would have never blown him out and probably would have won the race.
That never happened with the Chief when he tried doing that.
Yeah.
Like you said, he could do things that others couldn't.
Yes, and that's where I get it from. That made me realize you want to do things like the Chief, you can't do that, you know, and because he got away with it. He could have. He found a way how to get away with it, and horses will respond.
All right, flip that around for me, Fernando, then. Let's look at it from the positive side. What's the one thing that you've done that you learned and you said, hey, I did this and it worked really, really well and we got a big performance out of the horse?
Actually, a filly I ran here second day here, and she's a filly that I was babying her too much, and I did sort of kind of the same thing. So 7 days before the race, I kind of drilled her. In other words, when I mean drill, that I let her work pretty good, half a mile, and let her gallop out pretty good. And then I came back also 3 days before the race and blew her out. So now she was feeling good. She blew out great, blew out sharp, and then, you know, made me feel real good. I said, you know what, she's on her toes. And she was actually 17-1 in the top Fletcher, and a lot of big trainers coming from up north already here in Florida. So that's why the price was like that. And sure, she ran like she'd been training. I was pretty happy that she ran like that. You know, I was proud of myself that I did what I did, the blowing her out and everything, because it was just right for her before she used to hang on the wire like she was going to win and then finish third and make she look like that the owner was already going to take her to Tampa. So by her winning, she gets to stay here. So that was a great feeling.
That's a great game. Fernando Abreu with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on HRRN. Fernando, just a couple of minutes left before we have to wrap it up. I always like to end by asking trainers what other things they enjoy doing outside of racing, what other hobbies you might have. What things do you enjoy doing?
I mean, outside of racing, I mean, with the time that I have left after I'm done here, I just my son. I have a six-year-old son, and he's playing T-ball, and that's what I like to do. I thought I was a good baseball player, which is not true, but I like teaching him, you know, basically spending time with the family. I have my wife and a six-year-old boy, and that's basically what I do. When I do have time left, is just go to all his T-ball game and just spending time with the family. I'm a big football fan also, but that's on Sundays.
Is it Miami Dolphins for you?
No, I'm actually a New York Giant fan.
There you go, sticking true to your New York roots.
Yes.
What position does your son play?
He plays shortstop, and so hopefully, who knows?
You never know. Future never horse know. Trainer or future major leaguer?
Yeah, I prefer major leaguer. It's much easier.
Much easier. Much more money, too, by the way.
Yeah, more money.
Fernando, we appreciate the time, my friend. Really been a delight to hear your story tonight, and want to wish you all the best moving forward, and very happy holidays to you and the entire family. Happy New Year, and we'll look forward to catching up again soon, my friend.
Thank you. Same to you. Thank you for having me. Thanks a lot for everything.
You got it. Fernando Abreu here with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. If you missed any portion of the show, head to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows. Also, follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Penna. Happy holidays, everybody.